And now, it's the Florida Spectacular Podcast, hosted by Kathy Celestri. Find Kathy on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Celestri, CathySalustri, on Facebook at Celestri Kathy, and visit her website, greatfloridaroadtrip.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hey, and welcome back to this week's The Florida Spectacular Podcast. I'm Kathy Celestri, your host, and this week we welcome Dave Scheidecker. Dave is the historic archaeologist with the Seminole Tribe of Florida. I first met Dave a couple years ago when I went down to the tribe for some research I was doing, and was, well, quite honestly, really blown away by all that I thought I knew about the tribe that I didn't know, and the things that I knew were wrong. And there's just a whole bunch about this wonderful, resilient people living in South Florida. So we want to talk a little bit about that today. Dave, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. It's great.
I mean, it's obviously things are a little bit different now. I think the Atatique, the museum, is still closed right now.
Closed. We're, I think they're talking about possibly a summer reopening at this point. It's all watch and wait and see. We're going by the tribal guidance on COVID everything precautions, which is very careful. It's on the reservation, so we want to make sure that none of the elders, nobody out there, is going to get infected. And to put it simply, they're taking it incredibly carefully, incredibly seriously. I haven't even been out to the reservation since I think May.
Well, I'll tell you, I wish other leaders would follow that guidance as much as I miss going down there and looking through the research, which is amazing. I really, really respect that and can't wait to be back down there again when it's safe. So you are still working for the tribe. You haven't been to the reservation in May. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it means to be a historic archaeologist for the Seminole tribe? What does that mean? Obviously, you're not Indiana Jones going out or are you? Wait a minute.
No. Always get to tell people, no, we're not Indiana Jones. Even in archaeology, I have never personally punched a Nazi. Although thanks to the last few years, it's become more possible than I ever thought it would.
It was pretty close there for a few years, Dave. Admit it. Come on.
It was. It's still a possibility now. I actually, when I was an grad student, and I was trying to get undergrads to come out and help me with my thesis work, I was covering a World War II camp in Texas that was a place where Nazi prisoners held. And I actually billed it as your best chance in archaeology, Nazi, which back in 2013 was not a controversial statement.
I never understood when we had to start respecting the feelings of Nazis. Anyway.
I think we got a bit of field there.
Well, just a tiny bit. But so what if you're not punching Nazis and wearing super, super great hats, what do you do?
Well, as a historic archaeologist, my main job is actually mainly at the desk. I'm at this point much more of a historian doing research on topics of interest to the tribe. I handle any research questions coming in from both within the tribe and outside for historical knowledge. The archaeology end, I started as an archaeologist for the tribe, where I was going out doing field work, excavations on pretty much any work that was done on any of the Seminole reservations. We were out and do an archaeological and make sure that there was nothing going to be impacted. But when I became the research coordinator, the historic archaeologist, now I manage the Seminole sites and the Seminole site files, along with the tribal historic places, which involves a lot of oversights of forms, making sure things are done properly, that site protected, and a lot more paperwork than I was expecting.
There's always paperwork. No one, you know, it doesn't sell movie tickets if they show Harrison Ford filling out forms in triplicate. It really doesn't.
So. Still get to go out occasionally into the field, but it's more now as a kind of a oversight role than doing the actual field work.
Now, do all of the Indian tribes in the United States have archaeologists, or is this something that is unique to the Seminole tribe and some other people?
I work for the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, which is also called the TIPO, and federal position equivalent to historic preservation offices. but many tribes, federal tribes have a TIPO, but in many cases, a person who's a short person. In our case, that's have one. That's Dr. Paul Backhouse, who oversees everything, but it's also, he runs an entire office that I work for, which has a staff of archaeologists, which has people in their positions who oversee contracts, review of any activity coming in from outside the tribe that's happened in seminal areas of interest. So it's an extensive operation, and we're one of only a few tribes that have something that large.
The Seminole tribe is, from what I understand, a fairly unique tribe in many ways. One of the ways is this fairly recent, I hate to call it prosperity because I don't like the connotation of that word and all that, but the tribe does have a little bit more means than sub-tribe because it is a smaller tribe, I think, than some of these tribes. Is that an accurate assessment?
Around 4,000 members, enrolled members of Seminole Tribe at the moment. I am an employee of the tribe. I'm an archaeologist and a historian, and I was specifically hired by the tribe to do this job, to kind of go out and do these things. I'm not a tribal member myself, but there's a lot of trust put in me to basically make sure I'm telling their story.
Well, that's a interesting way of putting it, is that there's trust put in you to make sure you're telling their story, because I think that's been one of the issues we've had with narratives about the first settlers in the United States, the first residents of the United States, was that we've had a very white man's version of their history. And I remember you mentioned Paul Backhouse. The first time I went down to the tribe and I met him, I asked him, I said, what is the relationship between the Seminole tribe of Florida and the Calusa and the Tecuesta and the Tomoka and the Matacumbi and the Garangubi and all these tribes that we have since, that we've heard once lived in Florida and are now, in large part, thanks to Europeans, no longer there. And Paul looked at me and he said, well, those are just names that Europeans gave the tribe. That means nothing to the tribe. And he proceeded to explain to me some of the mythology that the state and federal government promote about the tribe and their origin story. And it was really eye-opening to me to realize that this thing I had been taught since, I think, fourth grade is when we first teach Florida school kids Florida history, was in fact a complete crock, and that the reasons for it were part ignorance and perhaps something else. So can you talk a little bit about when the Seminole people, or the people that Euro-Americans refer to as Seminole, when they first came to Florida? Was that the 1700s, like it says on the State of Florida website?
So one of the things that always comes up, and the word Seminole is not a Seminole word. It was a word placed on them from the outside to describe people. It had nothing to do with their culture or how they saw themselves. About a year ago, there was a canoe and it washed up on Egmont Key, about a quarter of a canoe that was 18 feet long. And I got to go up with Pedro Cepeda, who's a tribal member and he's a resident canoe expert, still crafts them. Doesn't work. And we went up there and we saw something that they had preserving. First looked at it and said, that's an old style one. That's like the old ocean going, the open waters, not the kind that we use, that is used now going through was used in the 1800s to go through the Everglades. It's the larger one that would go out into the Gulf and into the bay. And that ended up being right. We got an analyst. I believe they said it was radiocarbon. They placed it in like the 1380s. On our way back, though, one of the guys who had been showing it to us, he looks at Pedro and goes, so is that Seminole or is that from before the Seminole War in Florida? There is no pre-Florida Seminole.
There you go.
Seminole, they have always been here. The words put on by Europeans are a whole separate thing, but the tribe are descended from the first people who arrived in Florida. There are people who came from other places who would join the tribe later on. There were ties to other places because especially through the 1400s reception of the Mississippian culture, this was a large culture that united almost all of what we now think of the American South.
Well, so when you talk about there is no pre-Florida for Seminole, you know, they're the first people in Florida are the people that today we refer to as Seminole. It's interesting to me because the area I live in, which is Gulfport, which is not that far from Egmont Key. In fact, we're probably the closest part of the mainland to Egmont Key. We talk a lot about the Tokobaga, which are the what we call the people who we know used to live in this area. And what I think about a lot, Dave, is I believe in our museum, we have some tools that date to the quote unquote Tokobaga time in Florida. And I wonder if by saying, well, those are not Seminole people, that means that we have absolved ourselves of saying, well, this was a burial mound, but it was Tokobaga, not Seminole. So we don't have to do anything about it. We don't need to let anybody know about it because those people are gone. And I wonder if that has actually robbed the tribe of some ancestral remains and sacred places throughout its history with European Americans. Can you speak to that?
It has. A lot of the way history told by American scholars has really served American interests. It's placed the Seminole as people who aren't Floridian, that they didn't come here until the 1700s and 1800s, that they're no more native than the Americans who came in here and have no more right to the land than the natives who came or than the Americans who came here. And that's been used against the Seminole throughout their entire history. When you talk about the relations and remains, we've had a major fight going on with the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History over the remains of Seminole ancestors who they don't consider to be Seminole ancestors. And they have hundreds of remains of Florida native people in their collection. And they were refusing to repatriate them because they said they weren't tied to the Seminole, despite what the Seminole said. We've had an ongoing dispute with them. We started a campaign called No More Stolen Ancestors. Real great success note through all of this is recently the Smithsonian has backed down and Smithsonian Museum of Natural History has backed down and is changing how they define this to actually take into account the oral histories and traditions of the people with any native group. So we are starting to finally start the repatriation on these ancestors. When I talk about this, I also want to make sure I'm talking about the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, which is a separate entity from the National Museum of the American Indian, who we have an excellent relationship with and have no repatriation problems at all.
Two separate entities. And that's incredible. So essentially, the Seminole Tribe of Florida has changed the game, not just for itself, but for every other tribe in the United States. And that's, well, it's not the first time the tribe has done that, but it's awe-inspiring nonetheless. I mean, the first time, of course, and we're not going to talk about this today, is that the Seminole Tribe of Florida is the first one to really push the gambling issue, which changed the game for a lot of Indian tribes in North America. But the Seminole Tribe is unique in another way, too. I noticed on the museum shop, they have a face mask now that says unconquered, that I guess anybody could buy. I assume it is for tribal members. But do you want to talk a little bit about what it means that the Seminole Tribe is unconquered?
The Seminole Tribe refer to themselves often as the unconquered Seminole Tribe of Florida. That goes back to being the people who fought against America in the first major Indian war of the United States. The Seminole War, which went on from really 1811 at the start of what's called the Patriot War through 1858. And the people who make up the Seminole Tribe of Florida today are those who fought and stayed and held out and remained in their ancestral lands, never signing a peace treaty to end the war with the United States.
I love that story. It's neat to be from a place where there's something that spectacular that they could hold out. And I love some of the stories that I will read or see about what Euro-American historians have long referred to as the first, second, and third Seminole Wars, which I think now the trend is more to say the first phase, second phase, and third phase of the Seminole War. Some of the stories about just how bad Euro-American soldiers were about fighting and how ill-prepared they were to fight in Florida, because the Seminole definitely more in tune with the land and much better at dealing with fighting in a cypress dome or through the mangroves.
More in tune for the land, the Seminole fought a guerrilla war because they were people defending their homeland against an invading army. Using those same tactics that the America had used to help win the Revolutionary War, they set up West Point, they set up a training academy to train their officers and their soldiers in the European style of warfare. So ironically, the American soldiers came into Florida making a lot of the mistakes that European soldiers had made during the Revolutionary War. They just happened to also do it in an environment that none of them were could prepare for against people who knew the land intimately and were in many ways better armed than the Americans were.
Going back through American history and reading about the role of all the tribes, different tribes, not just the Seminole tribe, during the War of 1812 and Patriot War, which was not the War of 1812, and then something called the Red Stick War. And you look at all the countries that really did not want America to take all the land that it took, or the United States to take, the government. It's amazing that the United States ever became a nation at all, because they other tribes in the United States certainly had the support of the British. It's an interesting history, and it's amazing to me that the only tribe that managed to survive through that undefeated is the Seminole tribe. But it is definitely one of the things, you know, the name of this podcast is the Florida Spectacular, and you want to talk about things that make Florida spectacular. I don't think you can tell Florida's story without telling that story, because it's well, you work down in, I mean, when you go into work, Dave, you work in on the reservation, and you know exactly what happens if you get a flat tire or something on your way home, because there's just nothing. And it's not a friendly land to the uninitiated.
No, and that, and the Seminole will tell you that Florida is the reason that they survived, that the land, the nature of the environment is what helped them. And it was Sam Jones, Abiaki, but known to Americans as Sam Jones, at the end of the war was the one who led the people who would follow him from the tribe deep into the wetlands, into the Everglades, to near the area where the Big Cypress Reservation that I work at is now. Yeah, it's a harsh land. It's and we see it now after drainage, which I imagine you'll be dealing with at some point in the podcast.
Yes.
And you see us before and have to realize that it was mostly wetlands. The Hamites are called tree islands, and they really were. You saw them coming out of the water in many of these areas. And those were the refuges of the tribe. And it's really the environment that saved them.
I don't want to sound too spiritual, because I'm not incredibly so myself, but it does speak something to how well connected the Seminole people must be to the land, because it is what you're talking about, Dave's talking about here with the drainage. Before we drained the Everglades, or tried to drain the Everglades, which encompassed an area that was all the way up to SeaWorld, not just what we think of as Everglades National Park, it's a very seasonal thing. So, you know, you could come into land in April in the dry season and see all this land, and come back in September or early October, and all you would see would be islands. And it's not something a soldier, I would imagine, who was unfamiliar with the terrain would be at all equipped to deal with. And it's not a forgiving place. It's a beautiful place. But I could see where the thinking would be, yes, that the land definitely helped their survival.
The only American military fort that was actually built on land that is now a reservation was at Big Cypress. It was called Fort Shackelford. It was built in 1855. It was built in April of 1855 at the opening of what Americans thought of as the Third Seminole War. In an effort to pressure the Seminole in the area, just basically expand through the area and kind of make it feel that the coming of America was inevitable. And they opened this fort. It was a blockhouse fort, standard used by the American military in all the frontier wars. It was 40 foot by 40 foot wooden palisades. They built it in the open between hammocks, and it was operated for an entire 3 months, and then the rainy season came. And a whole bunch of American soldiers, mostly from New York and Kentucky, in heavy wool uniform, got to learn what a Florida summer is, and they abandoned it before the end of June.
Here's the thing that's so ridiculous to me about this, is that if there's one place you don't need a fort, it's in that particular part of the Everglades, because you kind of have a man-made fort. It's a very European way of thinking. Are there any remains of the fort to this day? Is there anything left of it?
There are. We actually we found the remains of it about 3 years ago. We had a rough idea where it was, and it's in a cattle pasture, because the Seminole have always been a cattle people, even before the Seminole Wars. They were one of the main cattle suppliers to Spain. They've kind of recaptured that tradition. So it's in the middle of the pasture. The landowner, the leaser, who's an elder of the tribe, I don't want to say who it was specifically, allowed us to go out there and do an excavation. And we finally found the remains of these burned, the wooden palisade wall, just this row of wooden stakes coming out and all the ash where it had been burned. So we are able to draw now an outline of Fort Shackelford where it was. And it's right in a central area with multiple hammocks around it.
That doesn't even make sense to me. And I don't live down there. So, okay. Well, I mean, American engineering, I guess. You know, throughout this podcast, I have been referring to the Seminole people as Seminole Indians. And I want to make the point to people listening that my very first visit down to Tippo, I asked and was told that the preferred nomenclature is Indians. I hope that's still true. And I don't want anybody listening to think that I'm being insensitive. I know there are a lot of different words we use for first people. Dave, is that still pretty much your understanding?
This is, unfortunately, my answer to a lot of things is it's complicated. If you go down on the reservation, you will hear the term Indian constantly. If you go to one of the restaurants, you will see things like Indian taco, Indian hot dog. You'll see it there. And for most tribal members, if I say Native American, they'll kind of give me a look like, okay, really? However, okay, that is the Seminole tribe in that area. It's not everyone. And we had a member of the Navajo Nation who worked for us for a little bit, who it was a very big cultural problem because from where she came from, it was considered an offensive term. It's different in different areas. So whenever I'm going out professionally, especially at a convention or some public area, if I'm talking in broad terms, I try to say Native people or Indigenous people. But it's always best specifically to use the actual name of the tribe or affiliation that they have.
So, and would that be Seminole singular, Seminole plural, or Seminoles, Seminole, or Seminole tribe? What is the, this is where I feel like we get all caught up in our own ignorance as Europeans.
We do. Before I started working here, I thought Seminole was the plural also, but no, they say Seminoles whenever it's plural. And
so it is the Seminole tribe of Florida, but it is the Seminoles, or they are the Seminoles.
Because there's a Seminole Nation of Oklahoma. So if you say Seminole Nation, you're talking about Oklahoma. If you say Seminole Tribe, you're talking about Florida. And often people don't realize that and get them conflated.
Okay. Thank you. This has been a great primer. There are about 5,000 other things I want to ask you, but we're running out of time. So let me ask you, would you entertain doing this again in a few weeks and maybe talking about Abiaki, Polly Parker, Egmont Key, any of those things? I mean, there's just so much and it's so incredible, but I don't want to be too piggish with your time. I just really think that so much of what makes Florida, Florida is the Seminoles' story in Florida. And I'd like to share that with our listeners.
Yes, please.
That's great. So if you're listening to this podcast, we're talking about the Seminole Tribe of Florida, and we've been talking with Dave Scheidecker, who is the historic archaeologist, not the Nazi punching kind, for the Seminole Tribe. And it's been really, really a pleasure, Dave. Is there anything, if say people can't come back and listen to this again, which of course they will because it's awesome, but if they didn't come back to hear you speak again, is there anything I didn't ask you that you really want Floridians and Americans to know about the Seminole Tribe that you feel like the message just isn't out there enough?
The main thing I think people that the tribe would want people to know is that they're still here. They are still a vital culture. They still have this understanding of the Everglades. They are not locked in time. They have been adapting to everything. They are a fully modern group of people, and they're still around.
Fantastic. They are indeed. In Tampa, near me, we have the Hard Rock, which even if you're not a gambling person, I got to tell you, the best meal I think I've ever had in my life was at the Rez, which is one of their restaurants there. Really good insights at those casinos, too. They're little blips of culture in between all the spangly rock and roll stuff. Also, if you find yourself out at Epcot, at the American Adventure, there is a very nicely curated exhibit of Indians, Native peoples, first people from across the United States. And the Florida and the Southeast is got a nice exhibit from the Seminole Tribe of Florida, from Tippo, actually. They change out the items in that periodically. And it's definitely worth going out to see. If you can't make it down to Tippo, to Atatike, which is the museum, it's just a little snippet of it, but it's very nice. And of course, in the show notes, we will have the link to the Seminole Tribe of Florida's newspaper, to the museum. And I also think I'm going to put a link in. You guys, y'all have a wonderful, wonderful blog for Atatiki, Dave. I don't know if you contribute to that, but that's always an interesting read.
Occasionally, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us today, and have a great holiday. And we'll set you up to come back after the first of the year.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays.